It is 3 o'clock and time for Arts Live and Local. This is Carol, your host. I want to start out with a song. And this is by an artist who is coming to town. Celebrate diversity and inclusiveness by coming and listening to Summer Osborne and Sarah McCracken concert, Left Coast Tour of Epic Mind-Blowing Awesomeness on Wednesday, May 13th. It's this coming Wednesday at 7 p.m. at the Performing Arts Center, 16th and Franklin in Astoria. And this is sponsored by the Coast Community Radio Women's Music Programmers. So let's hear from Summer Osborne. And this goes to you, Myla, and for Jim. Summer Osborne, and she is coming to town to Astoria Wednesday, May 13th, 7 p.m. at the Performing Arts Center. Perhaps we'll hear her on women's music after that. Summer Osborne. And speaking of children and being happy, or unhappy, as the case may be. My first guest is Jim Dodd. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Carol.
I'm not sure that's a great segue, but I like the child's laughter and the baby's laughter.
That was
quite lovely. Hey, you're in for a big congratulations.
Thank you.
Bet. A Glossary of Memory. Jim has put out a new, is this your first like book looking? It's not, is it?
I've had a couple of little chapbooks from Grange poems. I still do.
Yes,
write a poem every Thanksgiving
for the
Brownsmead crew that comes out to the Brownsmead Grange,
and we appreciate it.
I compiled a couple of sets of those for a number of years, and
but this
gave them
is,
out to friends. But this is kind of bigger and
very exciting.
Seeking a broader audience,
and let's just get the logistics this evening at 7:30 p.m. at Gala, which is 1017 Marine Drive.
Right.
You'll be giving a poetry reading and Q&A and and of course your books will be for sale.
Yes, they will.
And I understand there's going to be some goodies there too.
There's going to be pie and ice cream from Blue Scorcher and Frite and Scoop. So.
Oh, cool. Yummy.
Yeah.
Okay. So tell us about this book. It's and where, first tell us, give us an overview, and then tell us where the idea came from.
Well, it's what I call a imagined memoir of a woman who grew up probably early in the 20th century. She was born early in the 20th century, and her father was a sea captain on one of the last sailing ships, and her mother died giving birth to her, so there's that kind of current that runs through all the poems. And it's about thinking back on her life on board the ship and life afterward, and it's a glossary, so there's a poem per letter of the alphabet.
Yeah, that's rather unusual. So it goes from A to Z?
A to Z, 26 poems.
So you feature one word starting with that letter?
Almost all of them. There's three poems that have two words.
Okay, fair enough.
Most of them are just one.
Yeah, and then the poem, why don't you give us an example and then tell us where this concept came from.
Okay, this one is one of those that has two.
Okay.
It's Jack Straws and Jacaranda. And at the beginning is a little definition, so there's two definitions. From Jack, a sailor, and straw, also called spillikins or pickup sticks, a game played with a pile of straws or sticks. The object, pull a straw from the pile without moving any others. And Jacaranda, blue-violet flowered tree of tropical America, with a corolla of five petals fused into a tube. Portuguese from Tupi-Guarani of coastal Brazil, the Amazon. The sailors taught her jackstraws. They played when work was slack, letting her win until they found that with her quick, small fingers she could beat them anyway. When the crew was working aloft on deck below, she would play alone, tipping, lifting, slipping out the straws, imagining herself unbeatable. She taught her children, but they didn't like to play against her. They could never win. Jacaranda, Jacaranda, so lovely on the tongue, spread round the world, her father said, by the agency of man. They saw them blooming in Buenos Aires and Adelaide, lightly scented violet clouds lining streets and lawns and parks. She was glad she only planted one at her California home when she learned what a slimy wreckage the fallen flowers made. Jacaranda, Jacaranda, each June she brought flowered branches to her mother's grave. Mm.
Does it relate back to the mother in each poem somehow?
Not every single poem, but there's a lot of that. In and out, comes in and out a lot, though.
And is it sequential?
No, it is, it's like memory that, you have a memory of something recent and then something further back. Mm-hmm. So it jumps around a lot.
Okay, so now you have a choice. Either read us another one or tell us first. Where did this idea come from?
Well, I started with, I came upon the word ort, which is still the poem in the book. It's a very obscure word. It's mostly in crossword puzzles nowadays, but it means like a scrap of food left on your plate. Mm. So I thought, that's a cool word. Maybe I could make some, put together some poems that explore interesting words. Which was, kind of an interesting idea, but not very compelling after trying a couple. Then I started, because I went to A, and then I wrote the first poem of the alphabet. And I wrote some lines that created the captain. And from there, I, just kind of got drawn along on a voyage. And
well, you are well known for your poems that deal with nature and the natural world, but not exclusively.
Right.
So,
I mean, there's a lot of nature in these poems, but it's history, philosophy, and all sorts of things are cropping up.
Did you have to look things up or go outside your knowledge base?
Yes, indeed. I did a lot of reading on, the history of sailing and spent a lot of time with my American Heritage Dictionary, which has great etymology, word histories in it. So I did, spent a lot of time for each. Some letters were easy to pick a word for, but other letters I needed to kind of read through and find,
be inspired.
Inspired, yeah. So.
Yeah, nice. Well, why don't you give us another
one? Yeah, I'll go to K, Kraken. which is one I picked. Was pretty easy to pick. It's a sea monster from Norwegian.
Oh, sure, of course. Everybody knows.
Well, a lot of people know about the Kraken. Okay. Some people know about Krakens, okay. Anyway. Kraken, a sea monster, Norwegian, of obscure origin. She had seen many strange creatures of the sea. Horseshoe crabs, wolffish, moray eels, a hammerhead shark, tiny krill, but not the mythic Kraken. The captain had a book with an engraving showing a monstrous octopus wrapping its legs around a three-masted schooner. And there was the giant squid that attacked Nemo's Nautilus. Her father, who first went to sea on a whaler, told of seeing the skin of sperm whales marked with sucker-like scars. Once, she saw an enormous, long, tentacled thing floating just beneath the surface. The first mate, Lars, claimed he saw it once near the Faroe Islands. Big as the biggest whale it was, Lars told her. He'd been with the captain many years, pickled by brine and rum, crusted by wind and sun, can still outwork most other men and spin a yarn from the tiniest bits. The Kraken comes in a storm, or on the darkest night, rises up and up from the deep, 'cause the heat of hell woke it from its sleep, glides near to your slip, ship, opens its mighty maw. Lars would grab her arm in a bruising grip and bites. She would shriek, break free, and run for refuge at her father's side. The captain never warned him off. When she asked, "Is the Kraken real?" he answered, "Who knows what monsters hide in the depths of the seas, the minds of men."
Wow. You scared me. I'm I don't think I want that Lars guy around, I tell you that. Wow. Well, this sounds very alive. This is very exciting. And how long did it take you to put this together?
I started a good 2 years ago, so it's a couple-year project. And, you know, it's, you know, I haven't written, worked on the writing for a while, but now that I came back to put it together for a book, I found some things I wanted to change, you know, a word here and there. So it's been a long labor of love.
Did you conceive of it as the alphabetical book from the beginning once you...
Once I, you know, decided to... Actually, I had that idea before I, you know, I was going to put... Oh, let's put together some words from the alphabet. And, and then once I got started, I realized, yeah, it could be... It should be a whole... The whole alphabet.
Right. And you were ready to get it out there as a body of work. Well, it's very exciting. How long have you been writing the poems for the Brownsmead family, Jim?
Close to 30 years.
Yeah. Jim. Jim used to live in Brownsmead. That's how it got started. And we just never let him go. So this is wonderful. Congratulations again.
Thank you.
And this is this evening at 7:30 p.m. at Gala. I believe that's right. Did I say that? 7:30?
Yeah. Doors open at 7, but the reading starts at 7:30.
And that's 1017 Marine Drive. Is there some place, if folks can't make it tonight, is there some place they'll be able to access your book?
It'll be available at lulu.com.
Lulu.com.
Lulu.com. That's a book publishing, you know, kind of...
Mm-hmm.
Do-it-yourself book publishing.
Okay.
Or you can email me at writingongrand, all one word.
Nice.
At gmail.com.
I like it. Writingongrand.
And I hope to have it in local bookstores, but I do not yet.
Okay. Well, I bet that will happen.
But I'm sure it will.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks so much for coming.
Well, thank you.
You bet.
All
wonderful.
Right.
Wonderful. Again, that's Jim Dott at Gala. And the name of the book, A Glossary of Memory. It's a fictional, I like that he tells us it's an imagined memoir, unlike all those folks who write memoirs and forget to mention that they're imagined until they get caught, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Got some music.
Thank you, Carol.
You bet. Thanks, Jim. Got some music for you from my next guests, and we're going to spend the rest of the hour with them. If you have any special questions for our Māori guests from New Zealand. They're our local artists showing up at the college, Clatsop College. The opening was last night, but the show will be up through the end of July, so be sure to catch it and check out Coast Weekend for the cover. Here we go. Well, folks, we're listening to some music. It was the closest I could come to trying to represent and get close to our next guests. And apparently the language is correct, and the music is contemporary, as anyone can tell who listens to music, and it is lovely. So I have... actually four guests in the studio. I'm going to bring the music way down. And Colleen Ehrlich was here 3 years ago, and I am absolutely thrilled and delighted to have you here again this year.
It's fantastic being back.
Good, good, good. Yeah, we had a great time last time. And then Richard and Mickey Ala. If those of you who were listening last week know that they were over in your territory last year, and so now we get the rest of the family here. So I also have Carla Ruka.
Hi, Carol. Hi, everybody.
You got to get close.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
Hi. And Rhonda Holliday.
And Chora.
Chora. Okay, is that a hello?
Mm.
Okay.
Greeting.
Greeting. I'm going to write this down so I can try it on you guys next time. So. Okay. How would I say welcome? Is that jura or is... Okay, that's good.
It's one of the welcomes.
Well, that's an easy one, right?
Yeah.
Kia ora is a really friendly welcome, like kia ora. Someone, okay. Something that you would say to your friends or someone that you believe to be friend-like.
Well, after how many days? It feels like you've been here forever, but it's not true.
I hope it's not that sort of visitors in 3 days after catching a fish. You wish all of them would go away.
But not this group. Let me tell you, this group fits in so beautifully, and everybody agrees. Richard Roland is here. Richard, you all know. And isn't that right, Richard? Don't they just feel like family?
Oh, yeah, they're my family. And now they're the family of all the Astoria community.
That's right.
And so, yeah, thank you for coming.
Yeah, we're just thrilled and delighted. Now, these folks have actually been working all day. Have all of you been working? Yes, because they came in their work clothes, actually.
We are looking awesome today.
Yeah. What'd you do?
Oh, well, so we had our workshops. We had our workshops started. We started those today. A few of us are doing sculptural or clay workshops, while the other half are doing a demonstration of a firing, which is a paper kiln firing, which Rhonda is wonderful at.
Okay. I wondered how so many people were going to fit into the clay studio.
Oh, so we squish them in sardines.
See what I mean about friendly? This is family stuff. These folks who came, all six of them, the other three were on Talk of Our Towns with Donna on Wednesday. That would have been Todd Douglas, Bay Riddell, and Dorothy Wetford. And they are all clay artists. And this is different from last time you came, because we had a variety of people from different places as well as art forms. But clay wins the day here, especially that's Richard's forte as well. The name of the show, okay, folks, I've been practicing, but now I'm nervous, so it's not going to work. But Uke Aotearoa, Aotearoa Roa. Go for it. Somebody say it.
Uke Aotearoa.
There.
Easy to pronounce, Māori. All you need to know is the vowels, A-E-I-O-U.
Oku?
Yeah, uku.
Uku.
Meaning clay. Aotearoa.
Aotearoa. Aotearoa. Aotearoa. Okay. But before you leave next week, I've got it. The spirit of materials. So what are we talking about when we say materials? Are we talking about just the physical materials? Are we talking about more? What does that mean to you?
We're talking about the materials themselves. And in our culture, everything has a Māori or a life force or an energy, even if it's as slow as that of a stone. And when they have their life form, of course, they have their spirit as well.
So I did hear that the word Māori means essence. Is that
Māori?
M-A-U-R-I. Yes, it can be that. Yeah.
Is that different?
It's a life force. It's an
life
energy.
Life force. Okay.
It's, yeah.
And it's through everything.
Right. Absolutely.
Do and I heard talking on the others were saying, I think it was Bay, who has quite the sense of humor, talking about 15%. Of the people of New Zealand are either identified as or do identify as Māori.
Yeah, I would say that figure is higher than 15%.
Well,
myself.
That's what I'm wondering. That's what I was getting at is, look, I can see there's something here going on. Rhonda.
I have to bring it up because it was the funniest thing. In the most real thing that Bay mentioned, after he left the radio station, that it used to be 100%.
Well, that's, you know, excuse me, but I was listening to the show and I was thinking, wait a second, these are the indigenous people. Hello, yeah. That means that the land was. So that's why I'm wondering whether it's actually there are a lot of people who don't self-identify or don't even remember, as Todd's story tells, that when his grandmother died, it kind of disappeared and then it came back to him. Or there are other reasons that people prefer not to, and if this is becoming a political issue now and people are taking more pride and saying, yo, us, we're the First Nation, as they say it in Canada, and we're cool.
It's increasing right across the world that Indigenous peoples are more prepared to recognize the fact that they are Indigenous and proud of it. And others like Todd, who make the effort to find out, even if it has been lost. And for us as Māori anyway, even if you have a drop of Māori blood in you, we say you belong to us, which is different from a lot of other Indigenous cultures who do not want to really recognize their grandchildren that are of mixed blood.
Yeah.
For us, you got it in there. That drop is precious. And if you want to identify as Māori, that's it. And if you want to go on the Māori roll to vote, that's it. Or you can join the general roll. It's entirely up to you. But as a Māori, I actually like to be on the Māori roll.
So, and the government does whatever, it goes along with that?
It has to. It's part of our constitution.
Fantastic.
At the moment. Yeah. Mm.
Boy,
there are people who would like to get rid of it.
Well, just come to the U.S. of A.
Yes, I know.
We have a lot to learn here because it's been brutal here. Mm. People being thrown off and by each other and by the government and all kinds of things. So that's fantastic. Okay, so clay artists. Let me ask a simple question. Did you all start out as clay artists, or did you start out scribbling and painting? Was it the earth, the clay, that attracted you to the arts and this creative force, or was it just being able to express yourself and that became the way? Go ahead. Rhonda.
Mickey Arlove sent some questions over before we left to come here, and that was sort of one of her questions: what's our earliest memory of art, or especially with clay? And mine was when I was about 12 years old, I had an old portable record player. So you turn the record player on and it would spin around, and so I put a piece of clay on that.
Oh my God.
Tried to use it as a wheel, but of course it didn't work. So just like every other kid, you sort of don't really know what to make out of clay, especially where you're just playing with it.
Right.
So I made an egg cup, which I actually still have today. So on the bottom of my egg cup, I've written my name and 1982.
Wow.
So, the next time I started clay wasn't until 1998.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, I you know, you made me nervous. It's a good thing I'm here between you and the turntables. I can just see, ooh, look at that. They got
throw a piece of clay.
And what happened in between the two? So at the beginning, it was just a playful thing?
I'm always interested in art. It's just, I must have been born with it, just drawing, painting,
so
playing.
So you were doing all of those
things.
Yeah,
all doing that growing up. But it wasn't really a vocation in New Zealand to sort of aim for. You did art. It was a playful thing. It wasn't a job. You couldn't go anywhere with it. So you sort of still had to look at other avenues to make money.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't until my youngest child went to school that I thought, well, I need to do something, and what am I going to do? Well, I enjoy doing art, and I want to do art all day. And if I can make something of it, because the times had changed, you know, there are avenues now. So I went to Kirikiri Polytech and started the first year of a 3-year degree. And
In art or a whole degree?
A degree in applied arts.
Okay.
Yeah. So the first year was in Kerikeri, where I live, and the second and third year was in Whangarei, which I had to travel to, growing, you know, bringing my young kids up to. So, yeah, and that's when I first met Colleen.
How far are these places from one another?
Kerikeri is about an hour and 15 minutes away, south of Kerikeri, yeah.
So that's an effort.
Yeah.
So was Colleen teaching there?
She was a student.
I got tricked. I got tricked by senior tutor of the visual arts department. And he was having a barbecue at his place over Christmas. And he said to me, would you consider coming back to Polytech and doing the first of the applied art courses? I want students to see how real artists work. And Dummy said yes. and then he promptly turned around and went down to Teachers Training College in Palmerston North. Yeah. So I was left with tutors that hadn't asked me to be there.
Oh.
So I'm not sure what effect I had in the end.
Positive. Definitely positive.
Well, it must have been because, look, you're both sitting here together now. If it hadn't been positive, I don't think that would have worked out, eh? And Rhonda, it was interesting when you said that about feeling that or being discouraged from the idea that art could make a living at art. Now, that is the same in this country. Although, again, things have changed some, but it's true. Still, parents don't usually encourage their kids to be artists. They say, that's great, you've got some talent, but learn something that you can earn a living at. And I think people like Richard and even myself try to go into schools and have students come to us and say, art is viable. It's imperative. It's the core of civilization, and go for it. Don't, you know.
Well, to be honest with you, it still doesn't make a lot of money.
No.
I still have a job.
A day job.
I still have to work.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
On the other hand, my two daughters were talking to each other with their brother and said, oh, poor mum, she's so poor hutter, meaning having no money. And Jonathan said, what do you mean, poor hutter? It's taken around the world.
And then some. And what are you doing? Are you scrunching away at a job you hate, or you do something that's fulfilling and loving? There we go again about poor and rich. Who are the rich ones, you know?
If you're passionate about something, you're rich.
Right. That's now, true. Of course, you do have to feed your children. There's no doubt about that. But still, you're also setting an example for them, showing that, you know, your dream has to be right up on top. So what about you, Carla? What's your, how did you get involved in?
Well, you wouldn't believe this, Carol, but I was a very naughty child.
I would never. No.
And you see, I was always very creative. In fact, not so much in the cooking side, because cooking, I would go to the kitchen, and when we had our big gatherings, all my cousins would get rid of me by giving me the bread dough, and I would make sculptures out of the bread dough. Everyone would have fantastic bread, by the way. But they didn't let me cook. But I would make stuff out of everything. I would make, I would make your bed look awesome. I would, make pretty designs and things, and sculpt out the side of a sand dune. And there's also these rocks on the beach that, and it's similar to the moss that you have growing on your rocks here, that real thick green. So I'd go out one day and I'd go out and get my a shell or whatever I find, and I'd do an intense drawing on it. Then the next day it would be slightly grown over in that area, so it would be a shaded section, and then I'd come back with the highlights.
Nice.
I've always...
So was that when you were still quite young?
Oh, this is kind of, yeah. I think teenager. The earliest... All through. Maybe more the rocks was when I was about teenage, because, yeah, I was in a different area then. But I've always been very creative. And I have this thing with clay. I just clay to me is, and I've said it many times, it is actually my therapy. And if I stop playing with clay, I start going a little bit crazy, I think. And it actually grounds me. It's what helps calm my soul in a way. And I just have so much fun.
Is it the what you're making, or is it getting your hands in? This goes for all of you, actually, because that's one of the things about clay that's different from some of the other art forms. You're actually right. It's kind of like
everything.
Making bread, however.
That's
yeah, it's yeah. the one, I think it's the one material that dictates. You can pick up a painting and you can do it and you can leave it and you can come back to it. With clay, it dictates the timetable. It tells you that you must have the next 3 days free or you're going to lose the piece. It tells you that because you're not centered and because you're angry or upset or in a hurry, it won't do what you want it to do.
Wow.
So it teaches you a lot of discipline.
Very interesting, yeah. And Rhonda's
nodding
her
away.
Head. Yeah. So I heard all three of you mentioning places, and I have to admit that I'm not at all familiar with New Zealand. Although now that this has been the second visit, and these guys have gone over there, I'm getting more and more. I've always heard how gorgeous it is there, but I'm wondering how mobile are people in general? How about you? In terms of growing up in one place, moving to another place, how connected do you remain? I grew up in New York, for example, but I've lived here twice as long as I've lived in New York, and yet when I open my mouth, people say, oh, you're from the East Coast. You know, that kind of thing. So I'm wondering how that works for you, whether you stay connected to a family. Do you leave your families easily, or do the families stay together?
Many have to leave their families in order to have work, and it's a regret of mine that so many of my younger people have to go to Australia.
Many of them
go to Australia.
Yeah.
But their ties to home remain very strong. And our marae, with its major meeting house, dining room, kitchen, I suppose the closest to people's understanding here would be a longhouse. That still remains the centre of our culture, and people come back, particularly for big occasions, like it might be a 60th birthday, wedding, big wedding anniversary, 21st birthdays. For deaths in particular, bringing the children home in order to have them christened, you know, so that's really important. But just in terms of ordinary everyday travel, as Northlanders, we have to travel. You know, people say, oh, a 3-hour journey, well, that's nothing for us, because if we want to go somewhere, the geography of that part of Northland being what it is, we have to travel.
Yeah.
Every town is 20 minutes away where I am. 20 minutes to Kaikoura, 20 minutes to Paihia, 20 minutes to Kaiau, 20 minutes to Kauakau. Yeah.
I live 25 miles from here, but it's worth it because I love where I live, being out in the country kind of thing.
You know, I found this, the country around Astoria, particularly the coast, feels very, very familiar to us. And so going out the other morning, clamming.
Oh, yes, I heard.
That was awesome.
It was just
awesome. You guys
awesome.
Are so lucky.
Only the thing I couldn't get my head around was everyone wore shoes or sandals, and I was the only one in bare feet on the beach. I would never do that at home. I'd just get teased so mercilessly.
To put shoes on.
Oh, yeah. What are you doing wearing shoes on the beach? But I tell you what, coming from a particular area where we have our own bivalves, big bivalves, on our coast, it was nothing. I was enjoying finding all the holes, telling everyone to dig, and having them use their muscles while I just pointed and said, here and here, all these two over here.
As you can tell, this is Colleen, the grand dame. That's wonderful. Yes, I heard some great stories. It's it sounds as though, now, with the, had the six of you known each other before, obviously?
Oh, absolutely. You did.
Yeah. Okay. I won't ask if you all liked each other before, but you sure seem to get along well here.
We are just an extended family.
Mm-hmm. Good.
We're very close. We love each other dearly.
Mm-hmm.
I quite often ring some of our other members, like I ring Manos really late saying, hey, I got this like thing happening with my clay here, and what do you reckon?
Mm.
And, you know, so we're able to communicate just like you would with your brother or sister. Or
let's give a shout out to Manos too,
because please.
He was one of the fabulous people who came last time. He and Colleen were both due to come back this time, so we're sending him refuah shlema, we're sending him healing blessings, and we hope he'll be back another time, because that was
sounds like everyone's already making plans for future visits.
Oh yeah,
just wonderful.
Yeah. So I want to mention this would you know, I'm having so much fun just discussing with you tonight. Folks are going to get a chance to be up close and personal with all six of the artists, plus the support group here, the Richard, and I presume that Michiala will be there, and also Nancy Cook, who is the moderator this evening. This is a slideshow and panel discussion, and there'll also be music and dance, although it won't be you guys.
No.
I was excited. I thought maybe Carla was going to get up there and dance. You do dance, is that right?
I'll do that for you if you like there, Carol.
Okay, right in front of the microphone, maybe we can share. We'll have to do that. But this is this evening. It's at the Performing Arts Center, 16th and Franklin. And the panel starts promptly, sharp, Nancy told me, at 6 p.m. But you should come at 5:30, because there will be music by Al Pereira and dance, a Polynesian welcome, basically. A new student at the college. She's a hula dancer, Ilikia. And so that will be a lot of fun. And I don't know whether you're going to, are you all showing slides of your work? Is that the idea?
Yes.
And you'll talk about it?
Yes.
Okay. And then there'll be, I'm sure, a question and answer. And as you can see, folks, these guys are extremely accessible and easy to talk with, and also have lots to say. Can you tell us something specific about your work? Because the work that you brought this time, you had quite a bit of diversity in there.
Yes, I've changed it. Old age. Getting decrepit.
Wait. Let me play my violin while she's
just a small violin.
It's a very small.
It dictates. Mm-hmm. So I can no longer swing huge bags of clay around, and I can't with the size of the pieces I used to make, which were often in two pieces, which were very big and needed to be joined. You just don't have the strength to do that anymore. So yes, I've gone to the platters, which looks they look like they're easy. I'm lucky if I get one out of three.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, there's all sorts of tensions that are set up with the clay with that particular form. So I may think I have it even all the way through, but there may be just a little part on a rim that's just a tiny bit thinner, mm-hmm. dries faster, and it won't show up until I've fired it. And hello, there's a lovely plate you've put a lot of effort into, but it's got a crack in it, so it's not any good. But I enjoy doing it, and in particular, being able to work with Todd and Karuna Douglas and going down, because if people are beginning to realise Karuna really is
Yeah.
A glaze technician.
She explained that.
She's like a good cook. Mm-hmm. She likes experimenting. I wonder if I put just a little bit of this and that. And yes. So she has a lot of glaze recipes underneath her belt. And it's just wonderful working with younger people.
Oh.
Because normally you're working in the studio and you're totally alone. So to be able to work with others is really special.
Wonderful. And Karuna is Todd's wife. But yeah, she showed me she does that surface work, which is on his as well as
That's her passion.
Yeah.
And she's just she throws out her energy and it's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Yeah. And it's we're glad she was able to get here. Better late than never. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
And what about you, Rhonda? Can you give us a little, for those people who live too far away to come tonight and see the slides, that would be another thing. Is there somewhere where people can look on the web to see some of the work, Richard?
Yeah, actually there is on Clatsop Community College webpage. You can go on there and look at a few pieces of their work. But we may make another plan and try to put some more images from Colleen and the group on there. What do you think?
Yeah. I think that would be terrific because there are a lot of people. This, of course, is streamed worldwide, including in New Zealand, although I don't know what time of day or night it is right now. But there are people who are probably... What? I want to see this stuff now. How do I get to see it? So, but failing that, Rhonda, can you give us a...
Yep,
tell
sure.
us where your focus is.
The forms are... they're not very big forms. They're like in the shape of a seed pod or a shell. Some of the work is in shell form. And there is usually either hands, faces, or feet that... are coming out of it, almost like a hermit crab.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, it is. That's originally what it was based on.
What I saw also, you have something written on several of them.
Yes.
What is that?
The work that's here today, it's a series called Te Kotuku, or it's Kaitiaki, which is guardian. And a guardian of Aomarae is the kotuku bird, which is the white heron. So that work is focusing on the manu, the bird. Yeah, that's our guardian.
Oh, wow. Interesting, because we have blue heron more than white, I think.
But we saw one. Yeah.
Did you? Yeah, I have one lives in my field. They're magnificent when they rise up. Huh. So are those, I saw... Not all of them had writing, but some had the one word UE something, and then one of them had a whole bunch of words on it, but I had no idea.
There's one what the bunch of words is. It says here, it's kotuku.
Say it in Māori.
He kotuku, which is the white heron, and the T fell off the sticker on the work, so it ended up being kōuku. Which I thought was really cool because uku is clay.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Wow, that's cosmic.
The kaitiaki, which is the guardian, and himanu, which is bird. So that's the one with a lot of words on it. So those are the main words that are on there. See, the kaitiaki, which is guardian, manu, which is bird, or kotuku, which is the white heron.
The word manu means bird.
Yes.
Okay. See if I can keep that in my head at least. Okay, how about you, Carla? What are you working on?
My focus is, my work is predominantly on the strength of the female in general, the female spirit. I source my inspiration and my ideas from some of our legends. The one about Papa Tuanuku, which is our earth mother. She's a very strong female form for me. And then there is also Hine Ukurangi, which is our clay deity. And from her also there is Hine Ahuone, who was the first woman formed out of clay, which some cultures can relate to the same story of Adam and Eve, the same kind of story. So female form, and I also have a love of angels I'm not a Christian person personally, but I just love the form. I love the idea and the serenity, and I just think that combined with the strength of woman is just an ultimate awesomeness, and that's what my series are usually based around.
Nice, the variety in there too. Colleen, I wonder if you can mention now, is everyone in this group part of the Visual Arts Committee, or?
The Ngā Kaihanga Uku,
that one,
which is the national collective of the Māori clay workers. And we're very lucky that a number of the young people have also discovered a love of clay. And although we were the first to start it as a recognised art form in Aotearoa, you have to have others coming on board in order for what you have started to survive.
Sure.
So without our young people, it would just be a bunch of oldies, five oldies, showing. You know, it can get pretty boring. The beauty of having these young ones aboard is the fact that they are all producing different work. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing in there that echoes or mirrors anybody else's. We've all had our own thoughts, but often those thoughts have been discussed collectively or with some of us who started the whole movement. So in that way, we've been very lucky, but also, having been the beginners of it, there's been a huge responsibility on us in order to set the foundation correctly so that it will continue. And setting that foundation meant going back into our cosmogonic myths, which contain a great deal of wisdom. People think they're just fairy stories, but at the deeper level, they are actually blueprints for the way that people should live. They show you the mistakes that were made, and hopefully you're not going to make them. And that, basing it on our own knowledge, which is mātauranga Māori, Māori knowledge, means that our work and its philosophical base is different from what anybody else is producing in the world. And that's important to us.
Mm. Absolutely. Now, when did you first establish this?
This started with us meeting every Queen's Birthday weekend in what was known as the Māori Artists and Writers. Over Queen's Birthday, we would all get together. And that's when, finally, I found some other Māori who were working in clay. And that person was Bae. And I saw what he was doing and realised that he had a strong Māori flavour in his work and wanted to get to know him. Then Manu came back north. His students were producing clay work. They didn't have a kiln at that time. A number of those students had been my art students at high school, and they said, Mrs. Ehrlich will find them for us. So that's what we did. So you know, that brings Manos on board. Then we met Pyro and brought her on board in Rotorua, and it's just grown like that. So Carla's really right. We are a family.
Mm-hmm. Well, what you just said about bringing the young people, we know that nothing will go forward unless new people. And young is, as far as I'm concerned, is anyone younger than I am is young. So
yeah, we're actually not the young crowd, actually. We're the middle tier.
They are the middle tier.
Well, I'm so not the young one.
Well, see, Rhonda and I, we're actually the second tier.
Because you're already parents, so that makes
I'm
a grandmother.
You wouldn't believe it, folks, when you see these guys. They're very young looking, all three of the people in front of me, despite what Colleen said about lifting and stuff. It's they're all different ages, and the spirit, I think there we go again. That passion and spirit is what keeps us all young. So how young are the youngest then? What are we talking
about? In their 20s.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
In their 20s.
So how do they learn about it?
Most of them have been going through programs in other tertiary institutions, and some of us get asked every so often to go down and to contribute to
other parts of New Zealand.
Other parts of New Zealand to contribute to those programs, mm-hmm. and some of those are community programs as well. Mm. And it's very easy to pick out who really is wrapped mm-hmm. in the idea of continuing on with clay. Mm. So we give them every encouragement. What you're looking at in Rhonda in particular and Dorothy, the two of them organised this trip, is ones like me stepping back, and they are doing the organising, and I now know that everything is in safe hands and it will continue in the future.
Yes.
Carla has been giving lessons in the big city of Auckland and developing that as well. So there's
Wonderful.
That contribution mm-hmm. going on, which assures me that the whole of the movement is in very good hands.
And is there a website for your organization or some way that people can spy on you from afar?
We're a very loose organization. Mm-hmm. We do not have chairmen and secretaries mm-hmm. and treasurers, but it gets done
mm-hmm.
because different people pick up the different responsibilities and use the skills that they have. This one, for instance, Rhonda, I know she's going to dot every I, cross every T, and all the finances at the end of our big Ngāpuhi exhibition, to which something like about 45,000 people pass through a weekend. And that includes all of those people who live in Australia who want to come home. That's a time that they pick to come home, listen to all the beautiful music that's going on, and just about all of them pass through the exhibition.
And when does that happen?
And that happens in January every 2 years, so it's coming up next year.
Oops.
And Rhonda and I are already in the throes of organising that.
Wow.
So she is number one lady.
Mm-hmm.
On the desk,
mm-hmm.
the sales
mm-hmm.
desk, mm-hmm. and keeping everything together.
Fantastic.
Others like
I am honored to have you right here. I am just like,
And others like
wonderful.
Dorothy and the others, there they are, the great artists in their own right and exhibiting nationally and internationally. They turn into the technicians and they actually turn a gymnasium into a beautiful gallery space.
Mm.
So all of our muddy people really put elbow grease into things. They just mm-hmm. don't sit back and expect to be waited on. They contribute. Believe me, they contribute.
And the rest of the population gets it now, or is getting to get it, and saying, whoa, guys, look at this. They survived, first of all, despite all of the discrimination, etc.
What's wonderful for me is seeing the chairman of Ngāpuhi, Runanga, and Ngāpuhi are the largest tribal group in New Zealand, scattered in New Zealand up and down through both islands. When Alan Wehongi first proposed that an exhibition be part of the festival, some of them on the board said, $2,000? You want $2,000 to run an art exhibition? $2,000? Anyway, they are now at the stage where Sunny realises that having that exhibition is a way of bringing money
Absolutely.
Into the various Māori communities that the artists belong to. And they contribute to the health
mm-hmm.
of the people mm-hmm. in those communities. And so we're no longer talking about $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking at something close to $100,000
mm-hmm.
to put that big exhibition
mm-hmm.
on.
Mm-hmm.
But, even some galleries would never have 45,000 people walk through their door in a year.
Yeah.
And we do it in a weekend.
Very exciting. But and here we are. I've got, the various stages where you were one of the original people and now helping to run the thing and being a great part of it. It's very exciting. Folks, we have 6 artists here in town. They're coming back again, but possibly not for a few years. This is your chance tonight. Let me ask you a quick question. Today you had the hands-on teaching. Can people who didn't make it today come tomorrow, or is it an ongoing thing?
Everyone is welcome to come to the workshops, and they're quite incredible. They're up there working right now as we're down here talking.
Okay, so this is 10 till 3.
10 till 3.
At the college in the art department, which is go all the way up 16th, take a left, go all the way as far as you can go. And
yeah, and you know, I want to make sure, Carol, that everyone knows that the exhibition will be for 3 months. And that work is available. And to buy the work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one way that we can show our gratitude.
Absolutely.
to our family here. And so, yeah, come on up and look at the work.
We are out of time. I